Welcome to the Business Trendsetter Podcast, where we talk about trends and how to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. To learn about how to grow your business, go to our website at sparkpartners.com. Definitely go to your favorite podcast platform. All of our podcasts, we've done lots of things and really providing tools for business owners to be able to create long-lasting growth. That's really our main thing here. And of course, we talk about trends. We talk about lots of things. We talk about politics as it pertains to your business. We don't really get political per se. But, you know, being a capitalist economy, but it does have the, of course, the government is always involved, for better or for worse. If you believe that there should be a strong arm or a weak arm of the government, it doesn't matter. We just talk about our perspective. I happen to be more on the libertarian side of things, but you know, we are who we are. So let's talk today about a particular thing that's been happening in the government with respect to alleviating some of these issues with the economy as it pertains to inflation. So Adam, I'm gonna take this ball and hit it towards you. And let's talk about what President Biden has been doing with respect to alleviating the effects of inflation.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act, which is being signed today. And the reality is that a lot of our listeners are in the small to mid-sized business, and they often don't think of things like a bill being passed through the federal government, through Congress, being signed by the president. It doesn't feel like it touches them. And this is an opportunity where I think we want to reach out and tell them, no, this touches you. And it, if you don't see it touching you, then you need to expand your mind. You need to expand your vision, which is what we work with people all the time. You know, don't get stuck in a rut. Don't get, stuck in that box. Keep your eyes open, looking to the outside. And this is where there's going to be a huge opportunity start opening up. For the last 3 years, we've been talking, I give presentations on the road, you give presentations on the road, we do our podcast. We've talked, there's two mega trends that we've really focused on, demographics and the environment. Demographics we talk about a lot. We talk about what's happening with aging population, the impact of the aging population, the workforce, difficulties with the workforce, that kind of thing. We haven't talked as much about the environment, but what we've been saying is that, hey, environmental awareness is growing. It's a huge trend. It's affecting industry. It's affecting how we do business. It's affecting how consumers behave and what they buy. But again, it's been getting a little bit less. You know, our audience hasn't been excited about it. Some people tie environmental awareness to climate change, and they think that's sort of a radioactive topic. They don't really want to talk about it inside their companies. And so we haven't gotten to spend as much time on it. So we're going to spend some time on it today, because the bill allocates $369 billion. $369 billion. Now, that money has to be appropriated. I've been getting a quick education over the last 2 weeks about how this happens in the government. So first you have a bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, and it says, okay, we are going to allocate $369 billion for these uses. That then goes to an appropriations committee, and they have subcommittees, and they get into specifically saying where the money will be spent, you know, what programs, how, you know, what will go to particular states and things like that. And that's the appropriations process. That is going to be starting immediately. They've already had discussions about how to appropriate this money. But it's important that our listeners pay attention to what's happened to this $369 billion, because there's money out there that, in a way, it's sort of like the government's going to lay some money out on the sidewalk and they're going to give you the opportunity to pick it up. And, you know, we
that's
don't get
massive, especially for small businesses that are looking at what to do here during the heat of the recession.
So I want to break this into a couple of pieces. First, I want to talk about sort of energy, and then we're going to talk about the specific clean manufacturing and some specifics around manufacturing and how we do business that way. On the energy side, there's all kinds of tax rebates and money that's going to go for solar, wind, and hydro type projects. So, like, if you're in construction, I met a lot of people, you know, I talk to Vistage groups, then I meet a lot of people in construction. And one of the things that strikes me is they tend to get into a rut of, oh, I'm building this kind of a building, or I'm, you know, I do masonry work or some kind of a rut related to it. And all I would say is right now, you should be getting really smart, no matter what you do, around how you could be doing solar panels on people's roofs, how you could be installing battery systems in buildings, how you'd be doing backup power supply systems. This is a time when they're going to be redeveloping the nation's grid. So we've got these giant electric production plants with many, many thousands of miles of wires running the power around. We're starting to see now we're moving much more to a distributed grid, meaning we're going to make the power on your rooftop. We're going to make the power in solar farms that are closer to where people live. Same thing with wind farms, same thing with hydro plants. So we're moving to changing the grid away from bigger plants. Think of nuclear plants as the biggest, but coal plants, or they could be natural gas plants. We're starting to say we're going to produce less that way and more that's going to be closer to your house. To make that work, you're going to have to redesign the grid. That means more substations. It means more wires. That means we're going to be taking down wires that are in the air and putting wires on the ground, right? Because we know that in California in particular, but also throughout the Southwest, many fires are started by these wires. They're started by the transformers that sit up on poles, get hit by lightning. We're going to get rid of that stuff. That's what this bill's all about. So if you're in construction, what piece of this do you want? Where are you going to get out there? Are you going to help the homeowner? Are you going to help the small business? You want to put in solar panels? You want to start running wire, get some contracts for digging ditches to put wires in the ground, rebuilding substations, installing them? There's just, we're talking billions of dollars are going to be made available here for you to get a chance to jump in there and produce this. I'll never forget, about 15 years ago, I met a fellow. And what impressed me was we were having lunch, and he said he was going to fly to Pebble Beach, play golf. I'd flown there. I'd played golf there. We were chatting about it. And I asked him when he was leaving. He said, this afternoon. I said, what flight? And he goes, I have my own plane. I said, oh, that's nice. And thinking he's got some nice little jet. And he had a 707. And I was kind of like, whoa. He had made his money by going around and identifying lakes in the Northeast. And then he would go to whoever had control of the lake, the state, the county, the municipality, and he would volunteer to put a little hydro generator on the spillway of the lake. And then he would make electricity that would be used right there locally where people were. And he had just, I did, he took out a map, and he started to identify these lakes. He saw the opportunities where he could put the hydro generators, and then he would go make a deal with the local people that he would install it, and then they could get the electricity, and he made the rates, he got a rate work out in advance, and then he banked the deal. And then he had made literally hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of 10 years doing that. He was not an expert in hydro. I don't even think the guy was a civil engineer, but he saw the opportunity and he jumped on that opportunity, and he literally made up hundreds of millions of dollars in just 10 years doing that. And that's the kind of window that I think that people need to be looking at. We're going to put over 500,000 charging stations up in America between now and 2030. That's 7.5 years. In 7.5 years, we're going to build 500,000 charging stations. What's your piece of the action? There's a lot of small business people out there that drive by a gas station every day, several times a day. That's going to wake you here, okay? The number of gas stations are going to go down. We're going to subsidize the sale of electric vehicles. So there's going to be more electric vehicles sold, plus people want electric vehicles. So that base is going to grow. The number of gas and diesel consuming vehicles are going to go down. The number of gas stations are going to go away. That's going to create opportunities where those gas stations sit to do something different. It's also going to create the opportunity now where we're going to put these charging stations. And how's that going to be done? And what piece can you get out of that? Can you get into wiring them up? Can you be in manufacturing of charging stations? Components for charging stations, right? Then you need to start saying, hey, if I've got the ability to manufacture, what game can I play here? 500,000 of these things are going to get built. So
there's also some technology that I'm aware of, Adam, that is going to be another benefit. And I know you're on you got more to talk about, but it has to do with energy storage.
Yeah.
It's a massive push towards, okay, you're able to acquire this solar electricity or solar power or whatever it might be, wind power. But how do you store it so you can use it at night? How can you take that and shift the time when you use it and all that? But that's a whole discussion. There's a company I definitely want to bring into the conversation at one time and talk about that in particular. It's pretty massive.
Well, yes. And the point here I'm trying to drive home is that it's easy if you're in the construction business and you're out there putting up houses or shopping centers or whatever you do. And you can say, well, I do the masonry, I do the drywalling. And you would act like this doesn't have anything to do with you. And that would be kind of like, oh, my gosh, that's a little bit like saying that you were farming for wheat in Oklahoma back in the 1800s. And as the turn of the century came around, somebody said, you know, you can poke a hole in the dirt and you will start pumping money out in the form of oil. There were farmers who wouldn't do that. They said, no, I farm wheat. And so their neighbors pumped oil wells at an angle underneath their farm to pull the well out. Now, who was the dummy there, right? The dummy was the one who said, well, I grow wheat and I'm not going to worry about the oil. And they used to call it oil money, like that was somehow bad in the agricultural community. All I can tell you is the ag people are all dead gone and not many of them left. The oil people were driving around in their fancy cars and enjoying their time at the petroleum club. Now we've got the same thing happening again, where we've got this big, big push that's going to happen in terms of the environment and in terms of what's happening with electricity production and then how we distribute the electricity. And that's going to create some big opportunities. And so that ties in now specifically to what we've been talking about for 3 years, which is kind of what's going to happen in terms of when we talk about this environment. And you break that into three pieces. One piece is environmental, social, and governance. Okay, we call it ESG. And that has a lot to do, the term has a lot to do with investing. But we're going to get into how that affects small business. Then there's electrification, which we just started down. And then there's autonomous processes. So let's take the first one, ESG. What does that mean? It means we're going to be environmentally sensitive. And being environmentally sensitive, think of the opportunities. Packaging. You know, I still get packaging that has styrofoam in it. Styrofoam is horrible for the environment. You know, they're not sure it ever breaks down. A million years, it may not break down. So we're looking, what could we use? Are we using plastic? Or are we using something that's recyclable? So packaging is going to be a big deal for the next 5-10 years, where people are going to be changing packaging. They're going to be coming to something that's more environmentally aware. That leads us to what? Recycling and reuse. Can your packaging be reused? What can you do with it? If you can figure out a way to reuse packaging, then customers are going to reward you for that, and you'll get advantaged for that. Yeah. If you can't reuse it, then you could recycle it. But there's also a whole business saying, well, I'll just go collect up things and then reuse and recycle them. I'll make a business out of that. About 25 years ago, I met a fellow, and he created a business. He took a stone crusher machine, and he figured he could, whenever people were redoing a highway, they tear out the old road, which has got this concrete full of rebar, and then they reline it and they go forward with the new one. Or even if they're adding lanes, they often have to add them beside and have to remove some material. And well, they had to haul this concrete away with the rebar. He figured out how to take a stone crusher, and he could drop the concrete in it, and it would bash it up to small enough that it could start to separate out the rebar, and then it would drop down the concrete, and it would keep running through another stone crusher, and it would make it into small pieces of concrete. Then those small pieces of concrete could be turned around and used like gravel, dropped back into making new concrete at the same highway. He was effectively recycling the concrete. This guy, again, I met the guy because I was at a meeting, and they introduced me to him, and he was offering me a flight in his private jet. He wasn't a mechanical engineer. He wasn't a civil engineer. But what he saw was, hey, what are they doing with all this concrete? If they're hauling away somewhere 20 miles and trying to dispose of it, why don't we just try to reuse it on site? That's an environmental opportunity. And that's what we're trying to drive people to understand. How can you help people be more of a recycling, reuse kind of a mode? Then there's the whole idea of environmental cleanup. You know, how could you participate in environmental cleanups? Everything from the home, you know, where you could go around with people that have problems in their house, you know, and you clean up their house to businesses, to small businesses. You still have print shops. Print shops use chemicals. Photo shops, they still use chemicals. These aren't as big businesses as they once were. But start looking around, you know, at what opportunities there are in terms of environmental cleanup. You know, if you've got flooding in an area, that creates environmental problems. Ag creates huge amounts of environmental problems. You know, animal manure, chemicals that are placed on row crops, feeds, dead animals. There's all kinds of environmental pollution that's created in the agricultural industry. What could you do with that? You know, just think about, you know, for example, corn husks, the billions and billions of corn husks. What could you do? Could that be used for something other than what it's used for today? That's a very low value process.
There's a company I'm aware of in, at least I'm not sure if they're still around, in North Carolina, that was using a university license to be able to turn pig waste into asphalt.
Yeah.
So they were going around talking to pig farmers and actually creating a way for them to basically get their feed, you know, their feed for the asphalt. But for the farmers, it was a huge benefit to take away the waste.
Right.
So they worked out a deal where they got basically free product, free waste, in order to create asphalt, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with asphalt plants, but they've got to run 24/7. Otherwise, the asphalt in all the pipes locks up, and it's a big environmental drain as well.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to drive home here for people to understand is you might have seen something like this and thought to yourself, well, that's interesting, but I'm not sure it's economical. I'm not sure that pig waste would be economical with a petroleum-based coal, bottom-of-the-barrel coal type product. And I'm not sure what to do. Well, now what's happening is the government is saying, we will give you money to answer that question. We will help you do the analysis, and we might subsidize your product. If your asphalt costs this much more than the stuff that's made by Koch Industries, and but it doesn't use the petroleum products, we'll pay for that. We'll cover that gap. That's what the bill is actually looking at. How do we cover that gap? So if you're an entrepreneur and you've seen some of these things, now's the time to jump on it, seize the opportunity, talk to your congressperson, try to get that appropriated. Get some money for you to start those businesses and get them up and running. Now's the time. If you've been out there distributing gasoline and you now can see that that business is going to go down, which we've been predicting for 5 years, but we know it's going to happen, then maybe you should be going to your congressman and saying, hey, can you appropriate some money for me to get into the electric charging station business? Because I know where the trucks are. I know where they drive. I've got good handle on where they have to get fills. So, hey, we're in a good position to deal with this charging station. Get appropriate us some of that money so we could be responsible for the I-80 corridor in some state, or the I-15 corridor or something like that, right? The money is there, and you can either sit back and do nothing, or you can say, this is a chance. It's an opportunity, and you don't get these very often as small to mid-sized businesses. A lot of times it's money for military, and that's a tough game because you're dealing with General Dynamics or Boeing and these giant corporations, and you're at their whim. But this is a different one. This is a setup where it makes the opportunity there. Emission management, helping people understand what they do with their waste, what's happening when it comes out. If they've got water waste, how do we reduce the amount of water you use, and how do we make the water reusable again? How do we recycle it? That kind of thing. So, now get specific here, Manny. You and I, in the last year, we worked with a company that figured out how to reduce the amount of water that was wasted in chillers for buildings. Remember that? Yeah. Instead of taking the water out, putting new fresh water in, and treating with chemicals to get rid of the minerality in the chiller, and then disposing of that water, they had a new process that used polarization and another technology. It wasn't as cheap. It wasn't as cheap. Now's the time to jump in and say, wait a minute. It's not cheap because water pricing is this crazy thing where somebody just decides what the price of water is and people are just wasting water. We need some subsidies to help us build for manufacturing. We need some subsidies to help us design this for different size customers. We need some subsidies that we can sell these products a little bit cheaper because it reduces the water consumption by 90%. So this is the time. Here's a small company. They got a product. The problem has been a little bit around the economics. Joe, go for it. And the other one I love is, Manny, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, you introduced me to a guy who was making water storage devices for reclaimed water. And his water storage devices were kind of like Lego blocks. They were attractive. They had good use. But the problem was they're not as cheap as the big white tanks or the big black tanks that a farmer would typically use. So people didn't want to spend the extra money for this more attractive use. But what would happen is if they did, we would reclaim a lot more water. Right. By golly, those tanks those Lego blocks are more expensive, but now all of a sudden we've got a government bill that's ready to appropriate money to subsidize that so that we capture that wasted, lost rainwater and we store it somewhere. Then it's not in a big white black tank in your front yard or something really ugly. It's in some kind of an attractive use so that people will do it. So these are small business opportunities, and this is the time to move on those small business opportunities because, again, there's $369 billion out there that's going to go to somebody. Let's take another look at this whole area of electrification and process automation. So under electrification, we're going to have – everybody can talk about electric cars, right? So that's Tesla and GM, Ford, Rivian trucks. And actually, that game is actually out – that's out the door. That's out the building. I can't say to our base that they have much of an opportunity to build an electric car. But what I can say is who's making the parts for them. and what kind of parts are you making for them? And could you go talk to them about designing parts that go into those electric cars? But beyond that, start thinking about what this means. Fleets, okay? There are companies like utility companies and trash companies and police departments that have fleets of vehicles that never go more than 50 miles from their location. So this isn't, you don't have to have road anxiety in this environment, because every single night that vehicle comes back to the fleet, right? The garbage truck goes back every night. The bus goes back every night. And you know, you've seen vehicles with stickers on the sides of them that were fleets for commercial businesses. Somebody's going to say, go to that business and say, look, you could convert from gasoline to electricity, and we'll set up a charging facility on your yard so that people come in. If you've ever been to a country club, you might have seen a large golf facility where they have all these, you bring in these golf carts and they can charge 50 or 60 of them at a time, right? Well, now we're talking about doing this for the vehicles on the road. So fleet management becomes another opportunity in converting people in fleet management. Then think about all the box trucks and delivery vehicles out there. Okay, what kind of delivery vehicle could you, you know, start with and design that's electricity based? You know, nobody wants to pay, price of gas is down a buck, but hey, nobody wants to pay $4 or $5 for a gallon of gas if you can get electricity at a very low rate and you can drive around with electric powered delivery vehicles, motorcycles, three wheelers, off road, and ag. Who says that you have to have a diesel engine and a tractor? Right? There's going to be opportunities in all of those categories. Keep your eyes open, depending on where you live. Where does this make the most sense for you? But then think even bigger than that. Bicycles. E-bikes are a big deal now, right? I mean, e-bike, they don't go very fast, but they're extraordinarily convenient. Some people want them for exercise, but they're a great little commuter tool. If you're commuting 5-6 miles on an e-bike, you can do it with ease, right? So you have bicycles. Then how about power tools? Right? How could you electrify the power tools, lawn equipment, all kinds of motors that you would use in business? Even airplanes are going to be electrified. And of course, we're going to have that backup power you talked about, right? What can you do to help support the manufacturer of batteries, backup power systems? There's going to be there's not only a lot of components in what we've just talked about, there's a lot of software. One thing about electricity is you program it, so there's lots of sensors.
Yeah, there's software, there's cybersecurity, there's procurement. I mean, depending on, you don't have to have a background in manufacturing or in deployment of these things. Like you said, like the guy with the hydrodynamics, he wasn't an expert in that, but he found a way to become an expert to the extent he could provide the service to his customers. Yeah. Most of the people I know that have that kind of wealth are in businesses that you would think is just sort of like, okay, really? You make this much money by owning 9 dry cleaning places that have a new way of doing dry cleaning? I mean, it's crazy. Or I know a guy who has a cable harness company. It is a pretty close to $100 million a year company, and all they do is make cable harnesses for all kinds of industries, the automotive, aerospace, medical, you name it. They just take wires and they make them into cables for these things. And it's a massive business, but it isn't that exciting. Isn't it high tech? But they are following trends in that they're looking at where are the growth areas, and that's where they're attacking.
I mean, you have to sit down and start thinking a little bit differently, but then you can start to see how many opportunities are actually jumping out at us. I mean, the whole ag world is going to change. Agriculture is an enormous waster of water. I grew up in Oklahoma, went to college in Kansas. You live in Arizona. I spend a lot of my time in California now. And, massive amounts of water are used in agriculture, and we thought of that as free. You know, when I was going to college in Wichita, we all knew about the Ogallala Aquifer on the western half of the state, and farmers would set up these Ford 300 cubic inch, 6-cylinder inline engines and just pump them 24 hours a day, pulling water out with these massive irrigation systems they have. Just huge amount of water is wasted in agriculture. That's what this bill is set out to attack. How do we alter? How do we change that? So, plant-based proteins are making a big move forward because they take so much water to raise a chicken, a pig, or a steer, or even milk. They say, I read the other day, and I don't know, I couldn't verify, I couldn't find source data like at a university, but their claim was that it took 80 quarts of water to make a quart of milk, that between what the cow consumed and what went into the feed and what went into the managing of the milk itself. But anyway, what we know is it takes took a lot of water to make a quart of milk. The reality is a quart of oat milk doesn't take nearly as much water, right? And so people who are environmentally sensitive say, I want soy milk, I want oat milk, I want all these, you know, fake, sorry for the term, but, you know, non-dairy milks, right? Plant-based milks. They want those because it's environmentally safe. You know, they also probably like the taste. They also probably like other factors in it, but it is an environmentally friendly product. How can you help agriculture be environmentally friendly? How can you help reduce the water usage in particular? And that's where we see indoor farming. You know, we've talked about how we've got way too much retail space. So they're going to close a lot of Target stores. They're going to close Walmart stores. They're going to see, we're going to see a lot of older buildings that were built for some of these things like Sears. Some of that are going to become, some will become warehouses for the Amazons and the other e-commerce people. But there's a lot of space. Okay, we know if you take something of like a vegetable crop, like lettuce or tomatoes or green beans, something like that, then you move it indoors and you put it in an environment where you have 8 to 12 inches of dirt that you reuse, that you can then put the water in, you grow the plant, you catch the evaporative water, and then you take that evaporative water, put it back into the system. You use a far less amount of water, and you can produce crops, you know, 12 months out of the year, even in places like near Chicago or Minnesota. You can grow these things because you're growing them indoors. They're still organic. They're still healthy. You haven't lost anything, but you can grow them in a much more environmentally safe way. That is now going to become reality, right? We now are in a position where the subsidies are there. People are looking for money. They're looking to do these projects. It's yeah. time to act. So again, if you're in the real estate business, now's the time to get smart about that. How would I go about doing it? How would I get somebody to come on and grow an indoor farm or even a vertical farm if you're in a Chicago or a Tucson or a Phoenix? You know, think about it, Phoenix, and, you know, it's so hard to grow anything for the 3 months of the summer when it's so hot. But if you could take an old vertical building, four-story, out-of-date building, convert it into a vertical farm, right, then all of a sudden you're growing stuff right there in town. So the whole table to customer is so short, it's fresh, all that kind of stuff. Those things have been pilot projects for the last 5 years. Now it's time for them to become big projects.
It's time. And, you know, one of the things that our listeners and viewers may or may not know is that Adam and I actually work with companies directly, and in particular in helping them to align with these trends. We can actually work with your executive team, sit down, take a look at what your capabilities are, take a look at what trends are actually growing, and then draw a straight line. We've had many podcasts. We've talked about making, you know, pretty significant shifts away from your core business. That may be the case, but it could also be the case that you make very incremental changes that have massive impact. If you're delivering your value in a certain way, but by making a slight 5% change in a new direction, you're able to then capture these emerging markets, which could be absolutely massive.
Absolutely. And the last one I want to touch on is just basically green products with green processes. So back again to the ag projects and the process manufacturing there. What we're saying is that if you can automate a process and make it a smart process, you can make it greener, make it more environmentally safe. And that's where we get into, if you're a software engineer, now we're talking about artificial intelligence, machine learning, using data, which is the big data trend. You're starting using data and algorithms to start to manage the business. Speed is money. If you can help make decisions faster, you will waste less water, waste less energy. There's an awful lot of energy wastage inside of many manufacturing processes. If you get good at studying the manufacturing process for people, and you say, hey, I can make these changes and we'll reduce your electric consumption by 50%. Oh, now if I can reduce it that much, I don't have to depend on the utility. I could make a lot of my own electricity. Yeah. I could use solar panels, et cetera. I could become energy independent. Now look what that does for your margin. So anytime you can help people make green products with a green process, it's autonomous processes, it's machine learning, big data. These are the trends. And so it's everybody from people who make iron materials for tractors who can benefit from understanding this to help the tractor become, you know, electrified and then help it to be self-driven so that you don't have somebody involved in driving it, help the equipment on the tractor know where to put down the materials whether it's seed or organic fertilizer or whatever it's doing, you know, you're taking people out of the equation, you're making an autonomous process. Those are always environmentally safer because you have the less human error, a greater accuracy in the process. So now I'm pretty excited about this. I think you can tell that from the tone of my tone today. $369 billion out there. Our customer base should be grabbing a lot of it. We can sit here and think, you and I, of companies we've dealt with in the last 2-3 years from this is a specific opportunity.
Yeah.
And the question is, are you going to make it happen or are you not going to make it happen?
Precisely.
If you're
I invite our customer base, our listeners, to reach out to us.
Yeah.
Manny@sparkpartners.com, Adam@sparkpartners.com. Let's have a dialogue. Let's see how we can help you. So take a look at what you should be doing with this $369 billion appropriation. And certainly, to our new viewers on Futures TV, on both Roku TV and on Apple TV, reach out to us as well. We're here to help. So go to our website, spend some time there. We've got a master class called Think Innovation. We have another class called Unlock Growth. Reach out to Adam and I, and certainly let us know how we can help you grow your business. What are your final thoughts today, Adam?
Everybody, this is a big opportunity. This may be a bill passed by Democrats, but this is a very business-friendly bill. There's some big, new taxes, but those are on big corporations. You know, this is on the Apples of the world and the Metas of the world. Right now, this bill is really a very business-friendly bill. Clean manufacturing, clean energy, these are huge opportunities. Let's go get our piece of it, folks.
Sounds great, Adam. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Cheers.